Hello, this is Michelle Weston with Wellness Learning Curves 2.0. I hope you're having a great day. I wanted to talk to you one-on-one today again. I know that I spoke to you earlier one-on-one, but I sort of thought that the conversation between my listeners and myself is something I want to explore a little more in regards to living with a chronic condition. Sort of a subject that nobody really wants to talk to about, but many of us struggle with it. And after 24 years, I was actually invited by somebody you guys had heard before on my radio show, Catherine Chadwick. And she has a new podcast out called You've Got Nurse. Catherine wears a number of hats. I also love her project that she's working on to create, which is called the Sunshine Project, which is about experiencing more light and more energy and so forth. And she asked me to come on and talk about my journey through career. But what we got to was what's happened in the past 24 years. And that is that being diagnosed with MS in my 30s led me to have to make a lot of lifestyle changes. And I say have to because I wanted to, because it was important to me to be an active participant as the patient with my doctors and my medical teams, of all the specialists and so forth. It's always, always scary when you're diagnosed, because if you're recently diagnosed with a chronic illness like MS, you may find yourself stuck in a real gray area of adjustment and even acceptance. And I know that area really well. I mean, it's 24 years for me. But the emotional adjustment is one thing, but the physical takes it to a whole new level. So when you have a chronic condition, you have all these bizarre symptoms and you don't quite know what to expect. So you could have loss of balance. You could have cognitive, being able to recall something. I was always like a Rolodex and could recall very quickly. And now that's changed. And I work with occupational therapy at one time in my journey with MS, and it was helpful. Now I use a colored ruler when I'm reading articles or deep thought things that I need to concentrate on. It could be about having phantom sensations when you feel like, oh, my eye isn't working as well as it usually is. Sometimes it becomes optic neuritis, don't get me wrong, but it was important to like make sure that my symptoms that I live with MS can be experienced like a bag of tricks or Pandora's box. And we always say, and I was taught to think this, and it was weird in the beginning, but now I actually utilize it and use it well. When I get up in the morning, until my feet hit the ground, I can't give you a full picture of what the day is going to be like, because I have drop foot. I've had it for 24 years, and that is a symptom that is sometimes much better and sometimes more interesting with balance and tripping. There's a lot of things we don't know exactly that we're going to pull out of our bag of chronic condition symptoms. So what do you do when your body like goes rogue, when it just takes off and goes to an interesting thing and you do something that you didn't expect? I think one of the biggest things that I also tap into in my Pandora's box is I have learned to laugh at myself, because it's really, really, really essential. I've always been one to laugh at myself. I did it when I was a kid. Not like, oh, I'm stupid, not that kind of thing. I just had the ability to just go, wow, that was interesting. That was an interesting way you did that, or I can't believe you just did that. Not negative, but I've tried to use it because I was an odd and artsy kid, so I got laughed at quite a bit, or you know, which to me, I like, the more interesting you are and the more odd you are, probably the more attracted I am to know you better. I find people interesting when they have their own kind of road and personality and isms. And it's carried over into my adulthood and particularly living with MS. So I've learned if I don't laugh at myself in some of the tougher moments, I can wind up getting down more. If any of you have chronic incontinence, bladder or bowel or both, for God's sake, you better be able to laugh at yourself. And I'll tell you the truth. I don't wear light colored clothes pretty much anymore. I wear dark colored pants. I wear dark denim, black denim, because if I have an accident, I'm not wanting to be in beige or white or lighter color. That doesn't mean that I don't prepare myself for living with incontinence, and I do things for it a lot. But you know, you got to realize that there are things that we have to learn. I also have the desire to change. Living with a chronic illness, you have to really think about it and go, what can I do for myself that would be the most helpful to me right now? And that led into patient advocacy. And I talk about advocating for yourself, listening to the conversations, doing your homework and reading things and not freaking yourself out. Okay. Don't freak yourself out. Don't have a, you know, breakdown. But I think that it's important to know who you are, what you're able to do, and how much you can push yourself. Also, when you take ownership of your own body, because each one of us has our own vehicle that we get through this life in, being able to say, I have a responsibility in owning my illness is something that's actually a positive strength building thing. When I realized that my balance was and my tripping was happening in the first like 5-6 years a lot because I weighed 289 pounds, I made a decision to take ownership of being a bigger girl and always being okay with that. But now it affected my health. And when it started to really affect my health, not just, you know, oh, I'm bigger and I wear bigger clothes and, you know, I feel, you know, sometimes I take up more space than I'd like to on the bus or something. This was more about, I really have to address how I move in space. And, you know, if you diet forever, you know, which is another chronic condition for me, saying to yourself, I have to now take it on in a bigger way and learn how to shift my lifestyle in regards to nutrition and food and my relationship with food and choosing bariatrics, which again, for the 90 millionth time, I'll say should always be the last frontier, but it is a frontier that for many of us helps us a great deal. I've made good choices and I've also learned that sometimes when you're living with a chronic condition, we get very insular. We get very preoccupied with ourselves and we forget about those closest to us, not calling, not touching base with somebody else that has their own stuff going on, but you know would benefit from you giving them a call on a Sunday if a Sunday is a really hard day for them. And I forgot that my own aunt, Sunday was a tough day for her. The rest of the days were okay. But she, in her 80s, would appreciate a touch base on a Sunday. And I am now taking ownership of that again and will put it in my calendar, I think. I think for me, I'm going to have to put it as a reminder on a Sunday to give her a call or send her an email or send her something funny to just reach out and connect with her. But taking responsibility for our bodies leads to a different experience of a journey. With me, I think the biggest thing with living with multiple sclerosis and bariatric, so obesity for 16 years for obesity, on bariatrics in 24 years for MS is that I have more compassion, not just for others, which I've always had, but also for myself, and more patience. And I'm willing to put the time in to help myself in regards to learning what I can do to help physically. So we just talked about nutrition. You know, I contacted a nutritionist, a integrative nutritionist, and she was with the hospital that I had my internist at. And the group, they look at things a little off kilter, which was perfect for me. As I said, I like things a little off. And we looked at not eating things that had more fat or more sugar or something like that. But we looked at food that was inflaming my nervous system. I mean, did you ever think about that? Many of us have conditions that inflammation in our bodies causes more pain. Think about people with fibromyalgia. Think about people with migraines. It causes a deeper sense of pain. And if I was eating a lot of red meat or processed sugar or things like that, non-fat foods that were more processed, I felt differently. If I wasn't drinking enough water, I became aware of things that I had never really thought about. You know, they tell us drink this much water. Well, when you learn about why it's important to drink more water, it takes on a new meaning. And I genuinely mean that. You know, if our bodies are over 95% water, like seriously, over 90% our bodies are water, and we're not hydrating and we're not refilling the tap or the engine with more water, you'll find you'll have drier skin, but you'll also find that it will affect how you feel in regards to being more laid back or being more tired. That's a better word, being more tired, having more fatigue. It'll affect on whether I'm going to have the energy to do the physical activity I love. And that also was something that as a patient I took on and advocated for and found my responsibility, my role in. I hated the gym. I always hated the gym. I was a bigger kid, so I hated the gym. It meant that there was something wrong with me. It meant that I had to go to the gym to get into a different body, into a different size. Now, God, it's years. It's like 18 years now. When I found Pilates, and I use Pilates on a machine, I use a reformer because of my drop foot. It's easier for me to use the machine to help me with the pulleys, the pulleys to help my legs to exercise and give me more flexibility and more rotation in my hips and so forth, as opposed to doing Pilates on the mat. There are people that do Pilates on the mat. Yes, it's less expensive. It's definitely less expensive. But for me, I needed the reformer. I needed the piece of equipment that Joseph Pilates developed to help people who had been injured. Once I found that tool for me, that became a strategy on how to stay strong in my core, which for all of us is the center of us, getting up and down from the sofa or the bed or a chair and moving in space and having that strength, it was important. And as I get older, I also find it helps me with my bones and the strength of having my muscles really lengthen and stretch and really make sure that I'm working from my core, that I'm not just, you know, pulling myself up, you know, even at 140, 150 pounds, just pulling myself up that way. And I continue to try and use it. Was it hard for all of us during the pandemic to do the things that maybe we had gotten attached to that we really loved doing for ourselves or did with others? Yeah. But like any thing, it was really important that it was offered online. It was offered so that I could do it at home. And I had to do it on the mat for a while. But I also figured out how to order, you know, ropes and pulleys that I could also use in my apartment because I was that committed. And being committed to yourself with a chronic condition is also an act of self-love. I think that learning to be your own advocate and as the patient, taking responsibility and not just thinking that the doctor is there to save you, is there to cure you. It's a partnership, just like coaching. With coaching, you know, I am coaching a person and who has a desire to make a change in some area of their life, to enhance it, to make their lives better. And when I do that, I'm partnering with somebody. If you can partner with your doctor and your healthcare team, as I was saying about Pilates, about changing so I'm not eating inflammatory foods, and see that difference, I think it would be beneficial for most of us who are patients. Honestly, I think that we would just feel like we're participating in making the quality of our lives the best it can be. And with that said, being the best it can be also means that you are researching, you're reading, you're not flipping yourself out. If you're reading and you feel like, oh, this is saying that this could happen to me, this is saying that, don't take every symptom on, don't take everybody else's story on. It's important to know, first of all, because, you know, I grew up with a father as a doctor. When it says contraindications on medicine, that does not mean that you're going to get every single symptom, that you're going to develop an allergic reaction to something. Not everybody is like that. Honestly, they just are not. And if we freak ourselves out like that, it doesn't help us move forward and live our best life and enjoy our lives. I also think that in regards to thinking about whether you would work with an advocate or you would work with a coach, what those two job descriptions can do for you as someone living with chronic condition is they can support you if you're having challenges with billing for health insurance, which is always something that comes up. It could also be that you work with a patient advocate to help you during appointments to take notes, to figure out what's the most important of what you're being asked to do so that you can be more compliant. And compliance sounds like this word, like, why aren't people more compliant? Well, I'll tell you the truth. Why aren't more people compliant? They're not more compliant because they don't understand what they've been asked to do. Think about that. What if the doctor talks to you and you shake your head yes after they've asked you to do something for the next 6 months? If you don't really understand what they're asking you to shift and change, let's talk about this. You have every right and a responsibility to say, Dr. Jones, I feel that I am more than happy to make this happen in the next 6 months, but I'm not sure your description of what you're asking me to do is clear to me. Is it possible to reframe it? As a patient advocate, I do that for patients when I see their shoulders going up in front of me as I'm writing notes in my phone for them. That's a sign that, you know, it's okay to not understand something. It's okay to ask more questions. Ask the pharmacist. It's important to know how your medications are taken. You know, people are people, and we all have the ability to get lazy with taking our medications. But if you're on certain things, especially if you'd have, in my family, my grandfather had diabetes. He had to manage his sugar. He had to manage his insulin levels. Those are things that he had to take his medicine when it was needed. It wasn't like, oh, I'll just blow this off, because he would feel worse. He could make himself even more sick if he didn't. Those are the things when we don't take our statin drugs for people who have high cholesterol levels. You're being asked to do this because maybe in your family you have a lot of genetics that lead you to predispose that you could have high cholesterol, which affects your heart, which then affects your life. So when we talk about chronic conditions, that's even a chronic condition. How you handle stress is a chronic condition. To be able to do things for yourself, like take a walk when you're stressed, and know that just getting outside or going on a bicycle or jumping in the pool or whatever it is to you that works for you may relieve some of that stress. And sometimes it's stress and depression or anxiety. Wouldn't it be nice to know that you have the ability to help control that, to help shift that mood? And I think we have more ability to help ourselves than we give ourselves credit for. I really do. You know, I watch people. I can't do that. And again, I'm going to go back to this can't or won't, because it sounds like a can't. So I won't be able to help you. You can, and you have to find the ways that work for you. And you may have some people who are ahead of you that have found ways to manage their chronic illness, their chronic disease, that you want to pick up. Ask them, why do you look so good? Why, you know, people always say that to me, you know, knock on wood, seriously, I'm going to knock on wood right now. It's 24 years this year that I have MS. People meet me and they're like, why do you look so good? Well, I look so good because I've taken care of myself and taken on the responsibility to own my chronic illness. And some things I'm really, really good at, and some things I'm still, well, a lot of things I'm still a work in progress. But I want you to think about that. I want you to think about what can you take more ownership of? Using rubber bands at the office, at your desk to give you strength in your bones is great. Just bring a rubber band, those, you know, that you get in PT that you can buy online to stretch. You can sit at your desk and do that. It's a great idea. Get one of those soft balls if you're really stressed and use that ball to relieve some of the stress at your desk. Anything that can help us have less symptoms and feel better living with whatever illness that is a win for me. I really think that. I think it's important to realize that it's a win-win for me. And it's different for other people. I'd love to hear from you. You know, you can always please reach out to mjwellnessnavigator.com. Let me know your thoughts on how you handle stress, on how you're taking on your role as the patient more seriously and helping yourself in regards to how would I be able to, you know, have more energy and have less stress. Those are things you can do. That's not under the doctor's purview. That's under your purview. And I have learned that we don't do that enough. We just don't. And it's kind of funny because I would think that we would want to, but I also think when we're living with a chronic condition, we also get caught sometimes on the wheelchair, on that, like a gerbil wheel, on that wheel. And we forget that we can get off anytime. We can relax, we can rest, we can stop doing something to help ourselves. At work, you know, if you're a person who knows that you, with your chronic illness, have more energy in the morning, plan your day around that. If you get hit with neuro fatigue like I do after like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, make sure as you're putting your day together, it supports you. It supports you having the best day. And whether that's in an office or whether you work for yourself, whatever context that is, that, you know, you have a job where you're with a lot of people all day, you need to be able to come back to yourself and recenter yourself. And I think that that's all things that we're able to do that we forget that we're able to do. I think we lose touch sometimes with ourselves and think, I can't do that because we have this chronic illness. If you saw me, seriously, no walker, no cane, no wheelchair. Yes, I have a brace for my drop foot leg when I have super long days that I'm on my feet, like still best example, the 2 weeks of the US Open. And I wear that brace because it helps me lift my foot up at the US Open out in Long Island on the campus of the tennis courts. And those are things that, if that helps you, great. Look to find out ways that you can keep yourself cooler. If you need to keep yourself cooler, those of us who have issues with temperature change, you may want a cooling vest. I have a cooling vest. I am grateful I have a cooling vest when I'm at, again, the US Open or outdoors, you know, doing something like that. It helps me stay at a temperature that I don't start to feel like I have log legs, that my nervous system's being compromised, that I'm being more challenged. And even all these years later, they still help. Those things that I have found still help. You can turn to the MS Society and ask questions on where to get in your area cooling vests. Yes, they're online, but they may have some really good resources. There may be some new ones out. Take advantage of that. Do whatever you can do to make sure that your life is the best it can be. Honestly, the best it can be, because life is supposed to be enjoyed. You're supposed to be enjoying your life. My rabbi and I talked after my mom passed away and my father passed away years before, over a decade before my mom did, unfortunately, in his 70s. But what's important about this is that what I had to look at was, you miss your parents, especially, you know, nobody wants to feel like an orphan. Nobody wants to feel like they've lost their parents, because we want them around forever. But he said, if I had to explain in Judaism what your parents would want for you, is what the divine wants for you, is what the universe wants for you. And that is that we live our best life. Let's live our best life. Even with a chronic illness, the quality of our lives depends on us, depends on what we want to put into it, what we want to get back. And being a victim is a yucky place to work from. That doesn't mean that you're going to not have those moments where you're going to go, oh, I wish I didn't have this condition. I wish I didn't have this illness. Yes, because you're human. I mean, for goodness sake, all of us feel that way. But if you can teach yourself to rise to the occasion, then you're going to have a smoother life, a better life. And that's something that's why I wanted to do this radio show, this podcast, because I think that we need to take care of ourselves. So we're going to get back to a word that I love. And I was interviewed the other day by one of the guests that we had on the show. And that was Catherine Chadwick, who has created the Sunshine Project, which is about bringing more light and bringing more happiness into your life. And she also happens to be a nurse of many years, but she's on to her next career with the Sunshine Project, the Sunshine Quotient. That's what it's called, the Sunshine Quotient.org. But she also created something called You've Got Nurse. And she interviewed me the other day about this subject, because if I can share with other people, for me, the pass along is only as good as the sharing. So the word I'm thinking of is mindfulness. Mindfulness teaches us to access the clarity and the freedom around us. How do we do that? Mindfulness is something that, because it's a living practice, you practice it all the time, it asks us to see more clearly beyond anything that's limiting or a judgment that we have. And when you look up the word mindfulness, the English translation actually comes from a Pali word called sati, which is actually means bare attention, B-A-R-E, bare attention or remembering. And sati is part of Buddhism and it originated in Buddhism. But to be contemplative gives you a chance to wake ourselves up. Mindfulness is about waking us up. And if you could help strengthen who you are and guide us to healthier and a fuller life and assist us in having better relationships with ourselves and others in work and personally, and lead us to have a more inside fulfillment, then it's pretty powerful. The methods of mindfulness can be applied universally. This is not just for people with chronic conditions. They really can be applied universally. It teaches us how to slow down. What does mindfulness do? It teaches us to slow down and be present. Formal meditation is great, but it's not for everybody. It's an important part of the practice. I still believe that stepping out the door and taking a walk for 5 minutes is an act of mindfulness as well, is an act of meditation and being mindful. And if we can be more mindful, more aware every day, we are building up the platform, the foundation to have more everyday moments that are more positive. You can have a better relationship with an old friend, with your husband, with your coworkers. And you can come back to mindfulness whenever you need to. It's always right there. Just reach up, just close your eyes, and it's right around you all the time. And mindfulness, which is really awareness, mindful awareness, is available to us all the time, every moment. So do me a favor and just try. Close your eyes and think about this. Just pause and notice your experience with loving attention. What does loving attention mean? That means we do it with sincere desire to feel better. We are lovingly aware. I have my attention on this thing. That's an important part of paying attention, doing it lovingly, not with, oh, I have to do this, or how many times have I failed at this? It's doing it, loving yourself and saying, I'm going to pay attention right now. And when we develop more awareness and more acceptance and more kindness in our lives toward many aspects, we experience, there's just more light. As Catherine Chadwick would say, you bring in more natural light and you radiate that light, even with a chronic illness. Some people say to me, why do you look so good? Well, because I'm trying, doesn't mean I do it all the time, but I'm trying so consistently and with intention to be mindful that it helps me. And I know that there are more possibilities out there when you use mindfulness because it helps you, well, it helps me cultivate an understanding and reach a peace of mind, which has helped me countless times in the struggle with a chronic condition. And I think that that's a really important thing. And I'm very grateful to my teachers and those who have influenced me on my journey, whether they're from my classes at Maryland University in regards to mindfulness, in regards to how to be a better coach and listen more and talk less. Now, with a radio show, yes, I'm going to talk, but to be able to engage and listen fully and completely to another can open up you to exploring and realizing things that would make your life better. And that's kind of cool, you know? I think there's different, give yourself a quote. Find a quote every day that does empower you, that really makes a difference to help you. On Facebook, I put up a quote every day. It's a 24-hour quote every day. And it's fun for me because today is, I put up a quote and I'll take it down in 5 hours and put up a new one. When you focus on the good increases. How cool is that? When you focus on the good increases. It really, really increases. Wouldn't that be powerful? Wouldn't that be amazing that you could have and attract more positivity, more good things, more good experiences, more good observations, more good results? So with mindfulness, there's some things that I would say that are the key pillars of mindfulness. I really think that centering your body and being aware of the body is essential when you develop mindfulness. And whether you're driving to work or you're doing your laundry or you're sitting around or taking a walk and meditating, the body is always available. It's our pillar. It's our vessel. So when you pay attention to the body, you become more centered. And you become more grounded as well. You may hear that in yoga, being more grounded, being more centered. So mindfulness reduces this preoccupation we all have with thinking. Could have, I should have, I, what have I had? It gives you a chance to come back to yourself, be mindful, and shows how your body and your mind and your heart are really connected. They're a triptych, they're a triad, and they help you understand how to create change and impermanence. So if you're new to mindfulness, if you can pay attention to your body, you may find that it's really actually pleasant, and you may discover that can also be challenging. During a seated meditation, sometimes I am not able to bring myself back, but it also can teach me to practice that to find out why it's more challenging. If I'm uncomfortable, it's like, well, where did I go? And stick with it. And genuinely, I think you'll discover that the world of insight and wisdom opens up even more for you. And the other thing is really explore your mind. The word mindfulness, explore your mind. So I don't think we pause enough and examine our thoughts very much. Well, mindfulness can help you slow down and notice what you're thinking and gives you almost an echo and ability to hear yourself. So when you pay attention to the mind, you most likely discover this endless flow of being able to change thoughts that rise and they fall at any given moment. And it's really actually interesting and surprising to realize that that inner narrative that you're having is constantly offering plans, preferences, ideas. It's creating memories. It's storing that away. That's what we get with the ability to help us slow down and notice what you're thinking and explore your thoughts in your mind. So you also, when you observe your own thoughts, you have the opportunity to rest back into the silence and into that big cloud of thoughts. It's a place between thoughts. It's a place between the silence of not talking and the thoughts that you can hear in your own head. And that space is so delicious. Honestly, to be able to fall into that place, because you can choose which thoughts you want to nurture and which thoughts you want to let go. Living with a chronic condition, there are things we want to let go of. Genuinely, it's time to free ourselves from that. And if we take care of ourselves and pay attention to our inner self, our inner world, our inner conversations, you probably noticed that we also have something called the inner critic. And more negative states of mind. And if we can take care of ourselves, take care of ourselves, that negativity is something that we can shift by being attention to how we take care of ourselves. If you have a lot of negativity, that's normally rooted in feelings that you're not worth it, that you're insecure, that fear is a huge one. Fear and unworthiness and insecurity, they cause a disconnection to ourselves, to others, and the world around us. So, oh my goodness, it's normal if you have times of difficulty and anxiety and struggle comes up. You can't always change your circumstances, folks, but you can work with how you relate to them. How do you show up? How do you react to those circumstances? So we always talk about love and loving kindness. You've heard me share loving kindness meditations. If we can have more of an attitude of love towards ourselves, of connection to ourselves and others, of kindness to ourselves, living with a chronic illness, to our people around us, to those who support us as caregivers, we can change how we are with things. If you can practice more self-care and kindness, you'll feel your heart soften. You'll feel a joy and an opening and feeling more sunshine and more rainbows and more things that make you smile, like I feel like right now. And others will feel that from you. If you can teach yourself how to hold yourself, how to be in your life, and you can also teach others to be gentle with ourselves in all moments, to just be more kind to ourselves. That's taking care of yourself. Sometimes you'll hear it called self-care. Self-care is part of that. It's the opportunity to take ownership of how we see ourselves in regards to being important. You're really important. You're important to yourself. You're important to your family, to your spouse, to people you work with. Celebrate that. Appreciate that. Because every day you have an opportunity to sow the seeds of gratitude, sow the seeds of joy. And when you take the time to really consider those simple moments in your life, you will find there is so much more to appreciate and celebrate than there is in the negativity file. Because gratitude, being grateful, is a practice that helps us all be present with a wholehearted, whole-centered, aware and awake attention. There are many studies out there that show that taking note of what you're thankful for, writing it down every day, what are you thankful for at the end of the day? It could be one sentence. It could be one word. I'm thankful for the rain because the flowers really needed the rain. That's it. I'm thankful for the rain today. You can be, I'm grateful that I had more energy today to get through a workshop or get through more errands or get through a longer day with your kids. It could be a kind word that you can say to somebody else, an action that you would take towards somebody. It could be as simple as Catherine would say again, having the sun hit your face. Celebrate that. Appreciate that sunshine. And you're going to find a deeper appreciation for your own strengths, your inner strengths, and your beauty. You know, beauty doesn't have a size. Beauty is not a color, a race, a creed. It doesn't do any of those things. Beauty is beauty. And beauty, really, the people that you probably would describe that are really beautiful, normally, well, especially those you love, and I'm not talking about models, but I'm talking about us as normal people. Having that feeling of beauty is how I feel when I meet somebody who feels good in their body. And that's really important. So whatever the cause for celebration, consider this practice and help yourself to find contentment and find yourself in joy. Some of the quotes that I wanted to share with you, as I said to you, sometimes it's just a quote in the morning or at the end of the day or a word that can bring you back to how you feel about something and how you feel about yourself. And that's that mindfulness that we've been talking about. Mindfulness is also connected to taking ownership of your body. You're mindfully being aware of you, of how you function in the world, of how you show up, of how you benefit from paying attention and trying to live your best life. This quote, I do not have an author, but I'm going to share it anyway. If you start to experience imbalance or impatience or confusion or disconnection during the practice of mindfulness, that's okay. Remember, all you have to do is return to the practice without judgment. Without judgment, without judging yourself. The purpose of practice is not to attain some perfect state. The essence of mindfulness is the willingness to let go and start again. I hope that makes sense to those listening. Realize that being attentive and using your attention to focus yourself is honoring yourself, and you're certainly worth that. Tara Brach, probably for many of you, could be or is a wonderful asset to tap into. And Tara Brach, I kept one of the her paragraphs, her passages that she talked about acceptance and being present. And she said, by cultivating an unconditional and accepting presence, we are no longer battling against ourselves, keeping our wild and imperfect self in a cage of judgment and mistrust. Instead, we are discovering the freedom to becoming authentic and fully alive, with or without a chronic illness. For those of us with, it's more challenging. Because if we can be faithful in small things, that is such a gift, because it is them that your strength lies, those small activities that your strength lies. And it's common when you start a new endeavor, this endeavor of mindfulness, of more patience, of more responsibility for yourself because you're that worth it. It comes when starting a new endeavor, and you have to a lot of expectations. We always do. We set up a bunch of expectations, and this can lead you away from the purpose of mindfulness. The purpose of mindfulness is to be fully here now. And if you come, if you're being wrapped up in expectations or struggling because you're not getting results, you think you're not getting results, return to the intention of why you did this. What is my intention? What do I, in my heart, feel the intention of learning this was? Mindfulness takes time, and every one of us is worth it. Every one of us is worth it. Because if it is out of love that we do this, our paths can lead us to learn to use our gifts to help people, to heal people, to serve more people, to create peace around us, to honor the sacred in our lives, and to bless whatever we encounter, and to wish all beings the best, the most incredible life. So as Joseph Campbell said, and I've kept this quote for 25 years, when I was diagnosed, we must be willing to let go of the life we have planned so as to accept the life is waiting for us. Thank you, Joseph Campbell. It's a good resource for you, Joseph Campbell. He's a positive force in the universe. And I know that those of you out there are looking for more positive ways to support yourself and make your lives the best they can be. So thank you for tuning in to Talk Radio for Women, Radio 360. We're always trying to empower women. And for tuning in to Wellness Learning Curves 2.0, this is Michelle Weston signing off. Any questions, queries, or quotes or ideas that you want to send my way, please go to my website, www.mjwellnessnavigator.com. Thank you so much and have a great day, guys. Hello, this is Michelle Weston with Wellness Learning Curves 2.0 for Radio 360, Talk Radio for Women. You know, when you're living with a chronic illness, how to live with that chronic illness is tough. It is challenging. But whatever your own experience is of long-haul illness, a shift in perspective could help you enjoy a full and happier life. Now, Susan Sontag was one of my favorite people. She wrote a book called Metaphor in 1978. And Susan Sontag said, "Everyone who is born holds dual citizenship in the kingdom of the well and the kingdom of the sick. Although we all prefer to use the good passport, sooner or later, each of us is obliged, or at least for a spell, to identify ourselves as citizens of that other place. And some people only pass through the kingdom of the sick like tourists, but others unwittingly take up permanent residence. According to the Centers for the CDC, 6 in every 10 adults in the United States have a chronic disease, and 4 in 10 have 2 illnesses or more. And some 50 million of those suffer from autoimmune diseases of unknown origins. And many people now with COVID-19 have persistent symptoms that rank in these long haulers. If you're living with a long haul illness, perhaps you knew the pleasure of life on the other side before you got sick. Or maybe you were born with a lifelong illness. And I'll tell you, I began in my journey very unexpectedly in the kingdom of the sick at age 38. And I had to straddle both worlds for almost a couple of decades because sometimes you have to move through things. But I battled my way to remission a number of times through intense treatment. And sometimes it was a serious relapse. But along the way, I learned through trial and error that some tricks for leading a more meaningful and happy life with chronic illness are needed. And that causes us to look at lifestyle changes. So whether your chronic illness is stabilized or it's progressive, or whether you wrestle with physical or psychological challenges, or both, we all want some kind of agency over how the rest of our lives are written. So it's not about going back. It really is about moving forward. And at my lowest points of illness, I was hyper-focused on the word back, getting back on track, getting back to work, getting back to the activities I loved. I even threw a big back-to-life party when I achieved remission for the first time. I still had limits in my energy and capabilities, and I thought I was done with the symptoms of my illness and that my heart health would continue to improve over time. Having lived with my family in New York City for a bit, I was busy. And 3 months later, I had another relapse. And that stress of having that relapse was very, very tough on me because I hadn't realized that being in remission means my illnesses were dormant. They're not gone. I hadn't grasped how quickly and severely they could flare up. And once again, I had relinquished my independence in my 40s. And that was tough because that relapse was a wake-up call for me. But ultimately, I learned that with my particular illnesses, there was no going back. I just needed to figure out how to move forward in the context of living with a chronic condition. I didn't yet know the term that I had. I really learned that term when I was taking a graduate school level Columbia University workshop in narrative, in medical narratives. And it was important because these narratives make you look at your pre-illness state. Okay. And you could say, yeah, before that, I broke my arm and now it's healed and now I'm better. So we love those kind of stories. But some of us were born into a life of chronic illness and there's no pre-illness state. You just keep going on your chronic illness and you can choose whether you want to write your own narrative, in which the writer of the narrative moves forward with their life in spite of illness or adversity. And remember, you can't control your illness, but you can control your narrative. So when I stopped looking backwards, I reframed my thinking and my way of being so that my illnesses, my chronic conditions could come along with me. I learned not just to survive, but just to live, not just to live, not just to survive, but to thrive. And what helped me with this shift? You know, first it was a deeper understanding of my illnesses and their possibilities for relapse and my role in controlling external factors that could affect these possibilities, you have to learn that it's important that you need to shift in your thinking about how to best live with your chronic illnesses. And sometimes you have to look to people like Lori Edwards, who wrote a great book. It was a paper, Life Disrupted, Getting Real About Chronic Illness in Your 20s and 30s. And it was written in 2008. Definitely worth looking up. Edwards had different kind of chronic illness than I did. She had a primary dyskinesia, which is different. But by accepting her illness, by accepting her chronic condition, she was able to attend her graduate school classes and then work as a writer and teacher. I thought, if she can do this, maybe I can too. And that was the beginning of learning how to move forward. You need to shift your vocabulary. You need to change your vocabulary to what you want to do is you want to put that illness into a positive realm rather than a negative one. And it's important to replace words like can't with can. It doesn't mean taking a mind over matter approach to trying to convince yourself that you can do things you can't. It just means that you're not focusing so much on what you can't do and you relinquish what you can and you relish on what you can do. You know, instead of saying I can't attend a birthday party because I don't have the energy, how about I can meet my friends for half an hour over Zoom earlier in the evening so that I can still be part of the celebration? That's a thought. What about replacing restrictions with needs? I need to nap every afternoon in order to replenish my physical and mental energy. If I don't, I get so exhausted that I might have to spend the next several days in bed. At first, I saw my naps as a restriction that held me and the people I was with back. And yes, my daily schedule may be unusual, but it's because I have to meet a need just like anyone else. The more you can accept and honor your needs, the less restrictive they will feel. Another thing that I had to do was eliminate the shoulds. For years, I felt like I should be pushing myself to work or exercise, or I would get worse. And people would tell me, you should go for a walk. It'll make you feel better. Or you should volunteer. Then you won't be so focused on yourself. For some chronic illnesses, those activities might be great, helpful. For mine, they would be detrimental. And when you hear the word should, ask yourself, can I? If I do, will it be helpful or hurtful to my health? And those are very fair questions. Instead of thinking about experiencing chronic illness, suddenly, think about it that we may be able to sort of grasp ourselves and make lifestyle changes. Because creating a life that makes managing your illnesses easier going forward is the best approach. And this doesn't mean giving in to your illness, to your chronic condition. Doesn't mean giving up hope. It just means allowing space for the physical and emotional feelings your illness brings up. I tend to frame acceptance as a moment-to-moment experience, being open to whatever thoughts, feelings, or sensations one is having, whether they're good, difficult, or indifferent. And that helps if you're constantly struggling to control or escape or extinguish certain feelings or experiences. You are not able to live your life in full. You are not allowed to do that in the moment. But allowing them to be there, as uncomfortable as they may be, allows you to put your time and energy into living your life more. For me, it helped to think about the factors I could control in my life. You might ask yourself, what lifestyle changes would honor my health, my needs, and my shifted vocabulary? And what changes will help me have as many good days as possible? For me, this means taking a nap every afternoon if I need to, or finding work that allows me flexibility so I can lay down if I need to reboot. Sticking to a certain diet, I don't eat certain things that inflame my system, and I pace myself better, and I respect my own boundaries, or I'm always working on that. And I adopt my exercise routine to accommodate my chronic condition. For you, it may mean something totally different, but if you're struggling with chronic depression, an afternoon nap might be counterproductive for you. It may be better to go for a walk or meet a friend for lunch. But if you wrestle with certain things, like fibromyalgia for my sister, perhaps there are certain stretches at certain hours of the day that might benefit you. The idea is to take charge of your own well-being, your own life, to the degree that you can, by thinking about shifts that will honor your needs. Making these shifts requires physical flexibility, and that's what we want to learn. So pace yourself, learn your limits, set your boundaries. It'll make a big difference in your life. We'll see you on Wellness Learning Curves 2.0 with Michelle Weston. That's me, your host, on Radio 360, Talk Radio for Women.